You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Special broadcast today. This is the Randy and Ray Show. Randy Sutton, of course, your host every week, 34-year police veteran and the author of A Cop's Life, and, of course, the founder of The Wounded Blue, the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers, and my co-host, Ray Dietrich. Ray, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Hey, what's up, Randy? So, yeah, I'm a cop from SoCal, 17 years sworn, 3-year civilian. I was able to work for some very large sheriff's departments down there, from everything from a deputy in patrol in the jail, the investigations, IA, gangs, blah, blah, blah. And I exited as a sergeant. So I've done a couple things.
And on this show, if you have never tuned in before, we talk about all things law enforcement, and we do not hold back at all. As usual, Ray, there is a ton of stuff to talk about. And let's start off with some of the stuff that pisses us off the most. How about that?
My favorite.
I know. Okay, so I'm going to read this delightful headline. Congress to hold police misconduct hearings after petition from Al Sharpton. The Reverend Al Sharpton successfully petitioned Representative Jerry Nadler, who I know will shock you as a Democrat from New York, to schedule congressional hearings on police misconduct and, of course, social justice in the wake of the federal prosecutor's decision not to bring charges in the death of Eric Garner. Eric Garner seemed to be the gift that keeps on giving to those agenda-driven people in the media and race baiters like Al Sharpton.
Oh, yeah, and Jerry Nadler runs the fantasy committee there in the House, and they just talk about things that don't exist all day for clickbait and attention more than anything. The anti-police bias that sides, New York especially, it's coming out of that region and the left in general. It is getting out of control with the election cycle. I think they're just doubling down on this anti-police sentiment that they're creating. Like, I feel like they're creating it more than it even exists out there. So this is just another example.
I couldn't agree more. And of course, who's jumping on the bandwagon? Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, who they would pander for votes like nobody's business here. And that's what they're doing. But you know, here's what cracks me up. Al Sharpton is the least credible human being on the face of the planet. I mean, this guy has been caught in lie after lie, manipulation after manipulation, is literally made a fortune on race baiting and lying, mostly about law enforcement. And here, how is it possible that he not only gets television shows, but he's got the ear of Congress? How is this possible?
It's insane that the clout that this man is given, the man that doesn't even pay his taxes. Like, he's got huge IRS problems. He's in trouble with the IRS half the time, and they still give him clout to walk in, a known and proven liar, to even get to a point where they can have hearings on things that don't exist. They're just talking points to try to get themselves out there more. Al Sharpton is just about himself. He doesn't care about the communities. He's looking for donations and for cash for his pockets, period. Always been that way.
And he continues to race bait. They're literally, this guy's made millions of dollars on lying about the cops. And it just continues.
You're going to have Kamala and Cory in there literally just looking for sound bites. Like, they're going to say something inflammatory, something crazy to prove how anti-law enforcement they are, just so they can get on TV with it. And it's just funny because, you know, Kamala Harris being the state attorney general of California, I had the displeasure of working on a task force under her, and it was a mess. But, you know, never mind that she was the number one law enforcement officer in California. Now she hates cops. It's kind of weird how that changes when you run for president.
Yeah, well, of course. That's it's all about getting the votes. Talk about prosecutors. I wanted to talk about this district attorney down in St. Louis.
I'm speechless when it comes to her. Well, I'm never really speechless, but Kimberly Gardner. This woman gets elected because of millions of dollars spent on her campaign by George Soros. But she gets elected, and she didn't lie about getting about what her stance was. Her stance was anti-law enforcement. And she gets elected to be the district attorney of St. Louis, for God's sake, which is a crime-ridden community. And instead of actually putting people in jail for committing these crimes, she has made her her entire platform about not prosecuting people for crimes. But who does she want to prosecute? People? What people do you think she wants to prosecute?
Oh, could those be police officers, Randy? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's what she's really all about down there in St. Louis. It's a mess. You're seeing these activist prosecutors come in all over the country, choosing to file or not file just based on what they want, not the law, and holding police to these standards that are just ridiculous. They're more politician than prosecutor, and we're going to see the effects of it more and more. Just especially in St. Louis, it's terrible. I'm sure you're going to bring up a couple of those cases right now.
Oh, I am indeed. So this latest debacle that she's putting herself out in front of the media. I'm looking at a picture of her right now in front of the news cameras with this stupid smile on her face because she's loving the limelight. So there was an officer involved shooting, a fatal shooting that happened a week or so ago. The police, I know, will shock you, were actually doing police work, and they saw a suspect, a guy named Cortez Shepard. Cortez Shepard was selling dope out of his car, and a whole bunch of people are buying dope from him. They're watching these hand-to-hand sales take place. And this guy is such a punk that he has got his 7-year-old daughter in the car with him while he's selling the dope. Not putting her at risk at all, right? So the police go to approach him. And when they approach him, the fight is on, and he pulls a gun on him. Well, what do? They shoot him. Gee, that's a, play stupid games, win stupid prizes, right? So they shoot him. And what happens? Who gets vilified for this? Now, this guy's a four-time ex-felon. Four-time ex-felon. And one of the city alderwomen comes out publicly and blames the police for even approaching him because, as she says, the prosecutor, Kim Gardner, isn't going to prosecute for drug crimes anyway. So it's the police's fault. They shouldn't have even approached him. And what does Gardner do? She comes out and agrees with her.
It's crazy. They're setting up these officers to be unsuccessful in their job, period. The day that they can't go out and investigate a drug crime, and then the suspect chooses to take it to a place where deadly force is used, and they're the villain, we're in trouble, just in policing in general. And that's what's happening there. They've taken away, and here's the thing, they're using marijuana as the angle here. Oh, we don't prosecute just marijuana, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? This guy was a convicted felon with a firearm, and he had, I believe, cocaine and Xanax with them as well. So let's get over the marijuana issue. But you have these politicians still running this narrative that cops shouldn't be there. They're bloodthirsty killers. They're looking for unarmed men to shoot. And it's getting scary that it's getting to these prosecutors now. Like those are supposed to be on our side. They're supposed to be out there, getting the job done to keep people safe. And when they're fighting the police, the ones taking these people off the street, like, we're in trouble, man. Scary.
It is frightening. These are the people that are in power. They are determining the safety of the people that live in St. Louis. This alderwoman, oh my God, she's insane. Her name is Megan Aaliyah Green, and she claimed that the interaction between the four-time felon and the police, quote, never should have happened in the first place because Gardner has vowed not to prosecute marijuana possession under 100 grams, according to her Twitter post. And then she says, and she's right, our police need to be instructed to abide by these rules. And then the alderwoman further declared the officer's efforts to keep such offenders off the streets, quote, is a waste of police resources. And the district attorney quoted exactly, unquote.
It's crazy.
The fox is in the hen house, man.
The first thing I learned as a cop was crime starts with dopers, right? Like, they're going to go out capering, stealing, robbing, whatever, to get their money. Drugs are a good place to start to protect the streets. To say that these guys shouldn't be enforcing any drug crimes or speaking to drug dealers because she chooses not to prosecute something, where it doesn't make it legal just because she chooses not to prosecute, number one. But to take that power away from the officers, I mean, that community, they got to fight back and do something. I would love to see a recall in St. Louis.
Yeah, I have a feeling that will never happen. Actually, you know what? I think there was a recall effort. I do think that there was a recall effort, because I know the police union has been up in arms about this creature. So she also has created a Brady list of police officers because she didn't like their social media posts. And for those of who are listening, let me explain what a Brady list is. There have been court decisions that said that district attorneys have to tell defense attorneys if there is exculpatory information about their defendant, or if there are witnesses that have been compromised. So in essence, if a police officer has been suspended for untruthfulness in a line in an investigation or something, that name is then given to the district attorney, and basically, that once you're on a Brady list, you're no good anymore. I mean, you can't even testify, right? But she put these cops on a Brady list because of their social media posts.
It's crazy. Like, the Brady list is for the old, if you lie, you die. Every cop knows if you lie and get caught, you're done in this job. You can't testify. You're ineffective. You can't do anything as a cop. To go for social media and then to make that same jump to the Brady list because she doesn't like it is insane. That's like taking away these guys' complete power as police officers. And the social media, I mean, we're getting to a point now where you're seeing it over and over and over, officers being in trouble for what they say on social. Now, look, if it's complete craziness that they're saying online, okay, that's fine. But having opinions should not get you thrown on the Brady list with an activist prosecutor. And that's what you're seeing here.
That's exactly what we're seeing here. And here's the even crazier part. She hasn't told the police department who she put on the Brady list. So in essence, she can claim everybody's on the Brady list and she's not going to accept their testimony. She is quite literally dismantling the criminal justice system in St. Louis County. That's what she's doing.
All by herself, and everyone's watching. And she has no oversight, and nothing can happen to her unless they do a recall. That's it.
How is there no accountability? How is there no accountability for a district attorney? All you hear, and you've been hearing for year after year after year, the police need to be held accountable. The police need to be held accountable. Well, what about her? Doesn't she need to be held accountable?
You know, there's civilian oversight committees on so many agencies in this country. It's a huge hot point. Prosecutors are still in law enforcement. I'm not sure how they escape this fury, but I would love to see some type of oversight other than just a recall, that which is very difficult to get done. She's putting people in danger. Like, she's making it worse. And these guys still have to strap on their gun belt and badge every day and go out there in this environment. And I feel for them.
Well, and let's talk about the social media post, because that's actually the next story I wanted to talk about, because also down in St. Louis, Missouri, here's the headline. Cop facing discipline after paper publishes his social media post about his work day. Now, I read this. I followed this really closely. St. Louis police officer Ryan Lynch urged readers to tell state lawmakers they need to support law enforcement. And what did the police department do as a result? Well, let's talk about it a little bit. So he made a social media post, I think it was Facebook or something, And he said, day started with a vehicle pursuit. Subject pointed a gun at an East St. Louis copper and came to St. Louis in a stolen vehicle. 16-year-old armed with a pistol was the culprit. Luckily caught him with after a foot pursuit, and he attempted to toss the gun instead of using it on any officers in the area. And he went on to talk about what his day was, including, you know, seeing dead people, dead babies. And it was a very well-written, post. And it wasn't anything that was derogatory about anyone. He was talking about what he experienced as a cop. And the St. Louis Post-Dispatch saw it and printed it, not as a to denigrate law enforcement, but to show the people what these officers have to deal with. And what happened to this guy, Ray?
Well, they did what you'd expect them to do. They opened an internal affairs investigation on him. And I mean, I read it too. It was a great, you know, piece of content. It's an insight on what this job really is. There was no confidential information. There's nothing derogatory. There's zero reason why this officer should be in trouble for sharing this information. They should be hoping that their officers do this stuff. I mean, all these departments want to do the dance challenges and this and that, but when someone gets real, they don't like it.
Yeah. So the day after the editorial was published, St. Louis Police Department Internal Affairs Lieutenant William Brown accused Officer Lynch of, quote, conduct unbecoming an officer. First of all, if I don't think that this lieutenant from Internal Affairs did that on his own. If he did, he's a bigger tool than I could even imagine. But the fact that he didn't have the guts to stand up and tell the power, because it was clearly came from law enforcement leadership, that order came down, which shows you the absolute ineptitude of the leadership of the St. Louis Police Department.
Yeah, 100%. And we need to get over these social media policies and adjust them. Social media is how people communicate today. So essentially it's the same thing as telling these cops they can't talk about their day with anyone. They can't share anything about their job with anybody. Like if they're in person speaking to them, it's the same as putting it on social at this point. So restricting their free speech this way, it's disgusting, right? You know, and I'm sick of it.
I never thought about it like that, Ray. But you're absolutely right. This is the way that people communicate in these times. And you're right. It's like you can't. Oh my God! Is Internal Affairs gonna bust me for conduct unbecoming if I sitting at the dinner table talking about my day?
It's the same. This is how people communicate. This is how people stay up to date with their friends and family and community leaders, and especially when you're sharing such insight to the job of how bad it is in that area. You know, to punish him is just so wrong.
So the St. Louis Police Union is fighting it for him. But, you know, I'm surprised that this has not already been decided and gone to a Supreme Court decision, because so many police officers and law enforcement officers in this country have faced incredible backlash, including termination, for Facebook posts. And as you said, you know, there have been some, I've seen some dumbass Facebook posts posted by police. I mean, really, stuff that you would go, what are you thinking? Are you an idiot?
Sure.
No. So, you know, there is, if you represent yourself as a police officer and you put up hateful stuff or stuff that shows a bias or any type of violent tendencies, things like that, I get it. I understand, especially if you're representing themselves as a cop. But how many police officers have faced discipline simply for posting an innocuous meme or a post that just pissed off somebody on the department? How come this hasn't been decided by a court yet? That's my question.
Well, I hope one of these unions or the officers affected will take this that far, because it needs to happen. It needs to come to a point where, you know, cops have free speech too, period. And yes, if they're doing hate speech or whatever, then screw them. They're idiots anyways. Like, right. Like that's fine. But to not have a voice out there, you know, I know so many officers that are out there changing their names on social just so that they can like comment on things and have some kind of political opinion. They shouldn't have to, because now you're losing the voice of law enforcement completely. And if it's only me and you to get out here and talk about it, Randy, then we're in trouble. I don't mind, but that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I was the national spokesman for Blue Lives Matter for a long time. And Blue Lives Matter, if for those of you that don't know about this website, bluelivesmatter.blue, they're a police news and information website. And when they first started, they started with Facebook posts. And these were active duty law enforcement officers. And they came to me and said, Randy, we can't put our faces. We cannot be known because of our opinions. And they said, would you be our face? And that's what actually got me into being that spokesman. So the fear and the fact that they had to bring in a proxy, so to speak, because they knew that if their administrations knew them as Blue Lives Matter, they would be done. Done, done, done. How sick is that?
It reminds me of like the Gestapo and the secret police. If they find out that you're expressing an opinion they don't like, then you're done. And that comes from, you know, your administrations that are doing this stuff and, you know, sometimes community activists. There's these groups that go out and look for officers making comments that they don't like, and they're trying to publish them and get them in front of, you know, the activist prosecutors out there and the people who will listen to their nonsense. It's rough, man. I really do hope that they push this through the courts as far as they can and get some case law.
I think this would be a phenomenal case to really bring up. That it'll be interesting. But you know, very often when these departments know that it's going to go there, they dismiss the case.
Right.
Because they're afraid of getting their ass handed to them in court.
In this specific case, guaranteed they would. The guys
absolutely
wrote a great piece. And I'd be shocked if they fought this one too, just like you said.
So, you know, the way you describe things, I have to laugh, because you just put an image in my mind of World War II and the French resistance, you know, in the basement of the house, printing the flyers because the Gestapo was looking. And you know what? This is a modern day equivalent. It truly is. That's scary.
This is the underground. We're on the underground radio right here, Randy. And you know, we have our secret conversations with the guys who can't give their opinion, and we're trying to get their word out and their message. And that's exactly what's happening. And that's how sad is it that they make law enforcement and feel like that in America? It's crazy, man.
You know, I underground radio. I like it. we may have to do another show.
Perfect.
I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras. Gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com, and register with them, contact them.
Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So, right after 9/11, the New York Times blames, quote, airplanes for the attack on the Twin Towers. They actually did an entire story not talking about Muslim terrorists and said the planes attacked the Twin Towers until there was such an outcry that they had to actually say Muslim extremists. What the hell is going on?
The world's gone crazy. People are so terrified of offending anyone that they want to just clean and sanitize everything. So news isn't even news anymore, man. Like, we don't want to put any blame on the Islamic radical terrorists that hijacked those planes and put them into the towers. They don't want to talk about that because that could upset people. So let's talk about, let's just remember that something bad happened by some people. And these airplanes drove themselves into the towers, right? That's what we're dealing with here.
It is just it's madness. So of course, let's talk about New York, since New York and California seem to be the completely different. I mean, they're bi-coastal, all right. I think, you know. So crowd threatens police after gunman shoots cop and they shoot back. Okay, Staten Island. The police get a report. This woman contacts them and says that she is the victim of domestic violence, and she's all beat up. So these New York City police officers in Staten Island throw her in the car and they drive around, and she points out the suspect. Good policing. Well, they let her out so that she's not in danger. They go to approach this guy, who is a violent offender. They approach him, they go to arrest him, the fight is on, they try to use their taser on him, it doesn't work. Everybody thinks that the taser is like the panacea, right? It doesn't work half the time. And what's this guy do? He pulls out a gun and he shoots the officer, one of the officers, who then the other officer shoots and kills him. Why would this be a problem? But what happens? A violent crowd gathers and blames the police. And even though there's body cam footage of him with the gun in his hand, they claim they planted it on him.
Well, the first move is to blame the cops and protest. There's memorials out there. You know, they went around, like you said, and were taunting the officers after the fact and protesting immediately. You know, why in New York are we seeing this? It's because the environment that's created by politicians and community activists and their happy little mayor that wants to be president and all these things just compounding on each other. People don't trust the cops now because they're being told not to by their mayor, you know, and this is the result of it.
I just can't imagine that we have digress to this type of environment for these cops. You know, this suspect in this particular case, this guy yanks out a gun, fires two rounds, shoots one of the officers, and her partner kills him. To me, that's a happy ending. The officer is injured but not killed. The best thing that could happen from that is that she returns to full duty. I don't know. She got shot in the hand, and but that could be a career-ending. That could be a career-ending injury. You know, they minimize it when they say, "Well, she was just shot in the hand." Well, that she could lose the use of her hand and not and be disabled for the rest of her life. And the other officer did exactly what she should have done. She shot and killed the suspect. That to me should be celebrated.
Yeah, 100%. This is as clean as a shooting gets. They're heroes. They've survived their encounter and they put the bad guy down. And you're right. Like I had a good personal friend shot through the hand, and he was done. He never came back. He was his gun hand. He wasn't able to have the same kind of mobility, and he's done. So, you know, just shot in the hand is still, just like you said, it could be a career ender for the officer. So, and they survived it, but the fact that it goes negative so fast now, it's, I just don't remember it being like this. I don't know if it's social media, you know, just making it magnified to us and we're seeing it all over, or cause I just don't remember it being like this. And I work South Central LA, like where you would think a lot of this would go on. It just wasn't like that, you know, even 10 years ago.
No, we're being manipulated. We're being the media, politicians, and people like Al Sharpton and his ilk, quite literally, have been manipulating the history. They have changed history, and as such, they are. You know, when Black Lives Matter first came out on the scene, you know, they were born from the lives of Ferguson. Trayvon Martin. I don't know how the police ever got blamed for Trayvon Martin. They're still getting blamed for it. It had nothing to do with the cops.
Right.
And yet somehow the police are bearing that responsibility. So Trayvon Martin, the Michael Brown debacle, the lies of hands up, don't shoot. So Black Lives Matter emerged. And for those that don't remember, that movement was started by three communist women who claimed communism as their platform, and their mission was to dismantle the criminal justice system as we know it in America. Now, when that came out, I thought to myself, okay, these people are out of their minds and they don't stand a chance. But Ray, they've actually accomplished this in a lot of places.
You know, and you're seeing it, and it's more and more and more. You're seeing it more often. It's a crazy environment. Like post-Ferguson, like Ferguson for me is the flashpoint of this anti-law enforcement sentiment. Politicians are still using it as a talking point for police brutality. Never mind the facts. Never mind that Obama's DOJ doesn't do anything about it because they know it was a good shooting. Never mind that this guy jumped in and tried to pull a gun out of or wrestle the gun away from the officer that shot him. None of that matters. The facts don't matter. Hands up, don't shoot matters. And the narrative and just saying the word Ferguson and Michael Brown to get an inflammatory response, that's all that matters now. So facts are out the window completely on all this.
Has the American public become so dumbed down that they can no longer think for themselves and realize the manipulation that's taken place? Or is it like the silent majority just isn't talking about, you know, they realize that it's all nonsense and they just aren't talking about it because they don't talk about it?
I think the scary part is that the silent majority is still there. I think we're still fine, but the other side, this radical left, has made this environment to where if you stand up and say, hey, I support law enforcement, I support our president, I support this or that, you are now almost always going to be labeled immediately a racist, immediately a white supremacist if you're white, all of these things that are in their narrative that they use to just bash down any other opinion. I like to tell people, like, look, I'm an ex-cop white male who voted for Trump. I'm the most hated person in America. if you look at the news, and I'm not a white supremacist, so there goes their narrative, right?
Well, never let the truth get in the way of a good story, you know. And you know, talking about politicians. I think that Mayor de Blasio is drinking his own Kool-Aid. He came out with one of the most outrageous statements the other day that I just got. I think he's on LSD. The mayor boasts he has healed the relationship between the New York Police Department and the community. So despite, here's the headline. He claimed that the NYPD's rank and file have no problem with how he's running the city. And despite recent widespread attacks on New York police, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio has announced that he has, quote, healed, unquote, the previously strained relationship between the community and the city's police force. What's he smoking?
I don't know, man, but out here in California, they want more of it because he is lost his mind. That is the craziest statement I've ever heard out of the mayor's office, to be honest. This is the guy that talks about how he has to teach his son how to walk down the street properly to not be murdered by the police because he's black. This is the man that has attacked officers, over Eric Garner. This is the guy who's Mr. Anti-Law Enforcement in his presidential debates, and I still think he's only holding down about 0% of the polling. So he's healed nothing. He should probably check with the PBA on that one, and I'm pretty sure they have a different opinion.
I think you're probably right. So of course, yeah, and the community and the police in New York are healed. It's healed. You know, I'm thinking like a snake oil salesman or a tent preacher. You are healed.
Well, Staten Island, this last shooting where they're protesting, what happened after their officers shot, that's real proof that it's healed, right?
Oh,
right
there, Mayor. There it is. There it is. You know, I want to talk about St. Louis again for a second. And this is one of those, on this show, we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there was some ugliness that came out, that I think we need to talk about. And so a federal lawsuit was filed over the 2017 St. Louis protest arrests. Okay, there was, there was another anti-law enforcement, unrest that took place. It was protests. It got violent. The police moved in, and this time they tried to contain it. And the techniques that they utilized are now subject to some scrutiny. But an incident took place within that protest that is truly a black eye for law enforcement. And that is that there was an undercover police officer in the crowd doing what that undercover police officer was supposed to do, look for the people that are inciting violence. And he was set upon by some of his own brother officers. And they beat his ass. And when he complained about it, they tried to shut him down. Well, all of those officers that were involved in that have either pled guilty or are being convicted of lying about what took place. And what did that do? That gave added fuel to all of these lawsuits now against the police. And look at what they did to themselves.
I mean, it's always a terrible thing when cops do wrong, right? Like we love law enforcement, obviously. We're huge supporters, but look, they're people. Cops are people. They're going to do stupid things and things are going to happen. So they're just making it worse. And, I hate to see this stuff, Randy, but these kinds of incidents are going to happen. And when officers allow themselves to get caught up and put into these situations where they're doing wrong, they have to know that they're going to hurt their entire departments, everyone they've worked with, their reputation. It's all gone. It's a huge black eye. And, I hate to see that stuff.
I hate to see it too. And here's the deal. You and I were both cops for a long, long time. There were times that I did stuff that I shouldn't have done. And there was times I got caught. I remember I got caught up in a moment. I was a sergeant, and I had received information about a burglar in an apartment, and the information was good, I gathered my troops around me so I could show them how the sergeant does policing. Went knocking on the door. This is at night. I could see people in the through the slats of the blinds, and knocked on the door. No answer. Knocked on the door. No answer. And then one of the guys I had posted in the backyard said, "Okay, they're running." And so I kicked the door in, and we went running in, and we found the burglar. We solved a ton of burglaries because it led to the seizure of hundreds of thousands of dollars in recovered stolen property. But the entry, when it went to the district attorney called me, said, "Randy, what were you doing? You can't kick the door in for this." And I said, "Yes, I can." He said, "No, you can't." And they brought me up on charges for it. And I tell you, when I think about the things I did in my career, one of the most embarrassing moments, and I had young rookie cops with me. I had guys still on probation. And I realized that who is going to be called in to testify against their boss, right? These young officers. Now, you can't be in a worse position than that. And so I went to each of them and I said, "Look, I'm a big boy. I made the decision. You go in and you tell the IAB investigators exactly what happened, because I got to take my medicine on this one." And it was embarrassing. I mean, it was a personal, you know, for my career, it was an embarrassing moment for me. But I got caught up in the moment. But you know what? I owned up to it. And yeah, I got suspended for it. But I'm not gonna lie about it and then compound the issue. And that's one thing that I always told the officers that worked for me. Listen, when you screw up, just say, "Hey, I screwed up." These other cops down who lied about it are going to jail.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is if you lie, you die, right? Like, look, I've been in trouble too. And it's one of those things that it's in working internal affairs. I mean, I would give these guys opportunities when they're lying and screwing themselves up. Usually when I would see a guy get terminated for lying, because let's face it, in law enforcement, if you are found to be a liar, you are out. Like, you will be terminated. You're gone. I don't see many second chances for that. Usually when guys get fired for that, it's the lie is worse than what they did in the first place.
Exactly. Right?
And you know, when I was a sergeant, that was like, just like you said, that was one of my biggest things. It was like, look, like, I would try to get to them immediately when something happened. If it went a little sideways, they lost a little control, whatever the case was, and just go, look, what happened? Let's let it end right now and take care of your partners and not put them in situations where they have to lie and possibly get fired. And you just own up to it and we'll deal with it. That's usually how it goes. Sometimes it doesn't. And then, you know, you end up seeing whole teams going down because these guys will start lying for each other because they think they're doing the right thing by protecting him. But the first cop should just own up to it, man. And when they don't, it gets super messy. But that's like, we're not afraid to talk about that stuff too. That's real law enforcement. You know, people, cops are real people. They get caught up, like, and sometimes, you know, especially when it comes to force, I challenge anyone to get into a fist fight. If you had never been in a fist fight, you know, get in one and see if they say, "Hey, I give up, I give up, I give up," right in the middle of it. If you feel like just completely stopping as a person, like as an animal that we are, it's not the easiest thing to do in the world. So sometimes things happen. It's the other side of what we do, I guess.
You know, there, you just brought up a really interesting concept. I did a course, a presentation around the country for many years called Policing with Honor. And that's how to survive your career ethically, as well as you know, literally saving your life, but your ethical life. And the concept is loyalty versus integrity. You know, some people call it the thin blue line, where you know, you stick together no matter what. And while that may sound attractive in certain ways, when we throw away our own integrity, you know, nobody can take your integrity. That's something that has to be given away. And unfortunately, I've seen it all too often where you know, they give away their integrity, and it's for the best of intentions, and yet it turns out to be career ending. And you know, when we talk about, you know, it's interesting, this is a fascinating topic for me. That is that, you know, we will literally risk our own lives for our partners. We are literally willing to do that. And yet there are times when we should be standing by each other and stopping an action before it takes place. And what you just described is a perfect example. You know, in the heat of the moment, when you're in a fight with a suspect, you want to take that suspect down. And once that fight is done, once that guy's in handcuffs, okay, it's over. And yet there's still that, you know, you got that anger built, you got that adrenaline, but we have to be better than that. And when we see our partner doing something that can get them in a jam, even though it's painful, even though it's awkward, you owe it to that officer who is your partner or is a coworker to step in and say, stop.
100%. I mean, not only for the suspect, because I mean, we don't want people beat after the fact, but for that officer and for all the, because the problem is, it's not just that officer, right? Like we're talking about, yes, we want him to stop to save his career for sure, but every single other officer there, especially the sergeant who's on scene, any supervision is now locked into whatever occurs if nobody does anything about it. And putting your fellow officers in that kind of jeopardy, that's not what we're supposed to be doing. But you know, it's the veteran cops just need to do it, like, and step in there and make sure it's done. And I usually saw that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's something that doesn't happen often. I mean, how many, we're talking about, you know, the bad side of all this, but how many encounters go great? Most of them, almost yes. Always it goes great.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's just dealing with it when it goes bad, to not make it a career ender, to not make it something that gets someone thrown in jail, to not have three or four or five guys lose pay, you know, like that owning up to what you did, that knowing when to stop, or the veteran stepping in to get them to stop. Like, that's so important. It's huge.
It is. It is. And this is where leadership needs to step in as well, because, you know, sometimes these law enforcement leadership, you know, the administrations will overcompensate, if you will, when officers step out of line. Discipline needs to be firm. It needs to be fair. It needs to be meted out with understanding. So when you see, you know, something that may hit the newspapers, or, you know, of course, in this new age of video, you know, there's 13 seconds of videotape, and the police chief comes out and says, we're going to handle this right away. You know, how many times have you seen cops get hammered for discipline for a piece of videotape that doesn't tell the story, simply because it's a knee-jerk reaction to the political environment? So, you know, this is where leadership needs to do the right thing. And that not only morally, but also for the good of the agency, because when the police officers see discipline being meted out unfairly, that just drives a wedge even deeper.
Well, it gets into politics within departments. You know, I work two large departments. One was 10,000 sworn, the other was 2,000. So politics within the department, you know, came to play. And when you get in these environments where, you know, the sheriff likes him, so leave him alone, or hey, the sheriff doesn't like him, so we're going to get this guy, like those kind of conversations actually start occurring, like in internal affairs, it is scary. And I've seen it firsthand. That is a real thing. So, yeah, discipline has to be even. And when you're using policies to witch hunt people that you don't like that, that's when you start seeing this stuff in social. And a lot of it's because the politician / leadership in these police agencies are more worried about what the community is gonna say than doing the right thing.
Absolutely. You know, there's a story that came out where we're kind of getting low on time, but I want to talk about this, and it touches on a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today. There are just some viral videos that just came out, and it shows brutal attacks on white men by black mobs in the city of Minneapolis. Now, Minneapolis, I've talked about many, many times on this program because of the anti-law enforcement attitude by their city government and by their former police chief. Their former police chief was one of the worst. I talked about her all the time because she was as anti-police as they come, and she was a horrible chief. Well, they have a good chief in there now, and he's trying to do the right thing. But what has happened is, so these videos went viral. I mean, they're horrible to see. And the reason is because there's not enough cops. There's nobody in there. And Bob Kroll is the head of their police union. And he came out on Fox News yesterday. And he talked about it. And he didn't hold back. He said, this is the leftist agenda of our city council, who will not give us more cops and who don't prosecute. The prosecutor will not prosecute. He says, these people aren't scared. They knew that they were being videotaped because this whole Center City is under video surveillance. They knew it, but they weren't afraid of any repercussions. So here's why I'm going to a couple different topics here. Bob Kroll has always been outspoken about the what's going on in Minneapolis, right? Well, he had a target on his ass from the last police chief. So they were constantly, because he's the union spokesman, right? He's the union president. The police chief over there had internal affairs investigate him for everything. One time they brought him up on charges for wearing his police uniform during an interview. So what you just talked about is right on. And here, you know, you look at what's going on. This should not be taking place. But the city council of Minneapolis is literally trying to decimate the police department and not hire more cops. And that's what happens when there is no fear of consequences. You see, this looked like a third world country, man. It was scary to see.
Well, that's the first stage of anarchy, right? When they know that the cops aren't coming, or if they do, nothing's going to happen afterwards. There's a certain, you know, part of society that thrives on that. They want to be lawless. Like, they want to be violent. You have all these people in local city government that they're anti-law enforcement. You have Ilhan Omar out of Minnesota, who is majorly anti-law enforcement. It's an entire climate in that area. And, you know, it's you see these cities like, you know, where Chicago guys get beat up and Minnesota guys get beat up and like the officers, I mean, and I just feel for them to work in that much of a political supercharged environment that's pointed against law enforcement. It's just sickening to see it.
And this is happening, and right next door to Minneapolis, just last week in Richfield, Minnesota, a mob of angry protesters shut down a Minnesota interstate following the officer-involved shooting of a, quote, aspiring rapper, unquote, who live-streamed the encounter. Now, this guy, this is unbelievable. This guy sees a police car, purposefully runs a red light speeding in order to get the police to chase him, right? Then he live streams this pursuit, then jumps out with a knife and attacks the cops and gets shot. What happens? They protest against the police.
Well, I mean, it's one of those cases where obviously, Randy, they should have shot the knife out of his hand. They should have used like all the different alternatives and never used deadly force, even though that he charged him with a knife. It's crazy, man. Like, and probably I bet half the protesters don't even know that he had a knife. Like, whatever narrative that they're spewing from the other side is just anti-law enforcement killing and a man without a gun. Like, you know what I mean? So it's just
unarmed.
Yeah. It's just brutal. It is brutal.
So Minnesota, you know, they have, well, isn't that where Ilhan Omar is from?
Oh, yes. She is the congresswoman from Minnesota. Yes.
I'm sensing a link here.
It's crazy. You know, the more anti-police politicians that they can stack in Minnesota, the worse it's going to get. I mean, and that's just the case. She's out there. She's been caught lying about law enforcement. She's a proven liar with her anti-police bias. And she's leading the charge in Minnesota. So, you know, you got to wonder if these city politicians aren't just following her lead. Like she's the big one, and they're just kind of going her route.
End of watch with Randy Sutton.
On Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. We call it end of watch. And unfortunately, I have two names to read. The first is Detective Joseph Paglio of the New York City Police Department. Detective Joseph Paglio died as the result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and rescue recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. He survived by his wife, three sons, and sisters. His brother, Battalion Chief John Paglio, served with the New York City Fire Department and was killed in the line of duty when the World Trade Center's North Tower collapsed on September 11th. He's a hero. Detective Joseph Paglio, New York City Police Department, end of watch Monday, September 9th, 2019. The second is Investigator Dornell Cousette of the Tuscaloosa Police Department in Alabama. Investigator Dornell Cousette was shot and killed while attempting to serve a warrant at a home near the intersection of 17th and 33rd Street, 6:25 p.m. The subject was wanted for failure to appear on prior felony charges and had been located at his home by a bondsman. When Investigator Cousette arrived at the scene to assist the man, he ran inside the home. Investigator Cousette pursued him inside where the man opened fire. Investigator Cousette was struck in the face. Despite being mortally wounded, he was able to return fire and wounded the suspect. Investigator Cousette was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his wounds. The subject was arrested after showing up at the hospital as a result of his gunshot wounds. Investigator Cousette was a U.S. Army veteran and served with the Tuscaloosa Police for 13 years. He is survived by his two daughters and fiance. Investigator Dornell Cousette, Tuscaloosa Police Department, Alabama. End of watch Monday, September 16th, 2019. These names will be added to the wall in Washington, D.C., and they gave their lives in the line of duty. So I think we've run out of time here, Ray. Thank you so much again for joining me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement here. And we got much more to come.
It's always fun, Randy. I appreciate it.
You take care. And for the listeners, I want you to make sure that you go to thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the Wounded Blue, which is the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you haven't seen our film, go to Amazon and punch in the Wounded Blue and give generously to these men and women who deserve your support. We will be back again next week.